Wake up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D. Here's Mike Gill.
And a good Wednesday morning, everybody. What a day this is. It almost feels like NBA free agency is here. The NBA free agent frenzy seems like it's just about to begin. Last night, right around 6 Eastern, is when the news started to pop. The first Woj bomb was sent, and we are all over it today. Mike Gill, Ron Culver, in for Tony D, SB Nation AM here. The Yankees extend their home run streak to a record 28 games last night. That's unbelievable. Like, you're just kind of watching the scroll on the bottom line, and you're realizing that the Yankees have hit a home run in 28 games. And I'm sure you're watching your favorite team thinking, my team never hits a home run. In a world, in a league that everybody, all they do is hit home runs. You know, I read something yesterday that the Minnesota Twins are about to break the home run record for a single season that just happened last season. I don't know if baseball has a home run problem, but it seems that every team but yours hits a home run all the time, right? And on 28 straight games. And it helps when you get Aaron Judge back, 14th different player with a home run during the streak. He hit his first home run since being activated from the injured list on June 21st. And that was his first hit coming off the injury list. That was a home run. It's just home run derby every day, all day. Boom, boom, boom. The home runs are just getting out of control in Major League Baseball. However, baseball takes a little bit of a seat to the side, and NBA free agency is about to heat up. And I'll tell you what, when we talk about NBA free agency heating up, we're going to go and look into Houston. They might have put the first domino in place and got it on the move. We'll talk about that coming up in about 13 minutes from now. But first, our quarterback previews continue. The NFC North fans, get yourselves ready, because I got some bombs for you coming myself. It's Mike Gill, Ron Culver, in for Tony D, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
All right, good Thursday morning, everybody. Mike Gill, Ron Culver, in for Tony D, SB Nation AM. And we're taking you back on our Throwback Thursday on this week in 1988. We will give you the details. Today's a good one, a really good one. It actually can break off into a really good topic, Ron Culver, which we will get into a little bit later on in the show. 1988, you know, the Carolina Panthers weren't even a team. They didn't exist. And all week long, we've been looking at quarterbacks in two divisions. Today, it's the South, the NFC, and the AFC. We'll do the AFC South in about 2 hours from now. But we'll start in the NFC South. You know, we are less than a month away from the Falcons opening at training camp. They're in the AFC, the NFC South. This is a very intriguing division, and we like to talk quarterbacks because they run the roost when you talk about the NFL. Carolina, Atlanta, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, they're your four. I want to start with Tampa because this is Jameis Winston's year or bust. I mean, hey, he was the number one overall pick in the draft. A lot of high expectations. And quite frankly, he's had some good numbers at times, but just really hasn't been that franchise leader, that franchise quarterback that you hope to get with the number one pick. You know, yesterday we talked about Matthew Stafford. He was the number one overall pick and, you know, hasn't, you know, we looked this up yesterday after the show was over. The last time the Detroit Lions have won a playoff game, and I know our friends in Detroit aren't going to want to hear this, I'll remind you, though, 1991, Wayne Fonts was the coach of the Lions. That's the last time they won a playoff game. Now, the Carolina Panthers weren't born yet either, so that's the last time Detroit won. Tampa Bay has at least won a Super Bowl. Think about that, Detroit. Tampa Bay has won a Super Bowl. I can't even believe those words are uttering out of my mouth, but has won a Super Bowl in the time that you haven't won a playoff game. But their number one pick, Jameis Winston, is definitively on the clock, and he's got Bruce Arians. And Bruce Arians has come out. You know, when he got hired, he said he believes that a lot of the issues with Winston are mechanical. It might be. I mean, Winston, loaded with talent, did not have a good year last year. 19 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. You know, they had Ryan Fitzpatrick down there, Fitzmagic, and everybody was, you know, they wanted to keep Fitzpatrick. When you have players almost lobbying to keep Ryan Fitzpatrick, they almost know they're going down the road of mediocrity, and they want him over you. So this is a huge year for Winston. If he doesn't play well this year, he'll be gone in Tampa Bay. And, you know, look, he's got a lot of talent, but so far has been a pretty big disappointment, including the fact that he had DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans, very good weapons out there. I mean, I don't know what's holding him back, but I'm very intrigued to see. They got the kid O.J. Howard, too, the tight end from Alabama. I'm very interested to see when Bruce Arians gets his hands on Winston to see how that changes things for him. Let's go to Carolina. You know, Cam Newton trying to buy seats on an airplane the other day, $1,500, and he was told to sit and coach. You better hope that 10-hour flight didn't disrupt his legs and his quarterbacking ability. He should have been using that 10-hour to study up the playbook because, look, Newton, another number one overall pick, but has got to a Super Bowl, had that 15-1 season a couple of years ago. But, look, he had the injury. He's been cleared to throw for minicamps and or just cleared to throw for all the minicamps and stuff. But he spent the whole offseason rehabbing. So they had to go out and get reinforcements. Did not have a great year last year. Newton has kind of been up and down. And that 15-1 Super Bowl year that they had, you know, Newton was, it looked like he was changing the position as well as he was playing that year. He was awesome in that season. But that season seems like it was so far ago where he threw, what, 35 touchdowns and just 10 interceptions. He hasn't sniffed 35 touchdowns. In fact, the most touchdowns he's thrown in a season other than that year is 24. Not good. 17 interceptions last year, a lot of mistakes. The play's gone down, taking a lot of hits. And look, they drafted Will Grier, the West Virginia kid. And a lot of people like Grier. He could have possibly been one of the first-round picks. He slid into the second round. But, you know, Grier had a really, really solid career. Now, the West Virginia offense is not something that typically translates to the NFL. You have not seen a lot of those players who have had a lot of success at WVU move on to success in the NFL. But we'll see if Grier can push Newton. Because one problem that the Panthers have had is when Newton misses games, their drop-off has been precipitous. So Newton, big year for him because you wonder, he's in now his eighth season. What is the future for Cam Newton? You take a look at the contract there. He's got this year and then next year, and then he becomes a free agent. And we know in the NFL, those deals are not what you read. Atlanta, Matt Ryan. What an interesting story Matt Ryan is. Like, we could spend a whole show on Matt Ryan's career and how interesting this thing is. By the way, first round, third overall, you got some high-profile quarterbacks in terms of draft position. Had a great year last year. 35 touches, 7 interceptions, that Super Bowl season a couple of years ago where he's in the MVP conversation. Steady as they come. And I always wonder, nationwide, what is the perception of Matt Ryan? Like, if he's your quarterback, do you feel like you are Super Bowl contender? He's one of those interesting guys. And last year with 35 touchdowns and just 7 picks, 4,900 yards, that sounds like a guy that can lead you to the Super Bowl for me. The one thing with Matt Ryan, like I do my checklist for the Hall of Fame and for MVPs is, if you're a Hall of Fame player, in my opinion, you are constantly in the MVP conversation. You are year after year in that conversation as an MVP player. Well, last year he had to have been in that conversation. He had a fantastic year. He won an MVP. So Ryan can certainly lead this Falcons team. The question is, can he get him back to the playoffs? You got to get to the playoffs. Too many times the Falcons have had disappointing years, last year included. Jones, Ridley, they've got weapons there in Atlanta. And let's go to Old Faithful, right? The Saints, who have a great quarterback situation. Drew Brees, we know, is fantastic. It's not slowing down. 40 years old, but 32 touchdowns, 5 interceptions a year ago. Almost 4,000 yards. He would have had 4,000 had he played the last game of the year. He restructured the contract to try to, you know, help the team out because he knows I'm 40 years old. This is where we are. We're right there. This team is right there, and it's because Drew Brees is still one of the best in the game. Kamara's awesome. He's got that weapon out of the backfield. Michael Thomas, one of the best in the game. Jared Cook, love him at tight end. Big plays there. So Brees, there's no reason why he shouldn't continue to be at the top of this division. And if he goes down, Teddy Bridgewater is another guy who could probably step right in and lead the Saints to the playoffs. So you got four goodies in this one, and they're all very interesting. They all have a story. Brees, I think his story is a little bit more solidified. Ryan, more steady. And then you got Winston and Newton, the two of those who have had uber talent, but up and down careers. And when you rank them and take a look at this division, I think you got to look at Drew Brees and the Saints again. Because of Brees and what he brings. And even if Brees gets hurt, you still got Bridgewater. I love Kamara. It'll be interesting what happens, with Mark Ingram out of there. What do they do in the running game? Those guys split so well last year. They did, you remember, they did the interviews together. And Michael Thomas, awesome. You know, one of the best receivers in the game. So they still have the weapons on the offensive side of the ball. You know, the Falcons, I'm interested to see Freeman. He's got to stay healthy. He's a weapon out of the backfield. And then we mentioned Jones and Ridley. Those two guys, great. But Sanu's another one who's pretty good. You know, they got three good weapons. So those two, Brees just slightly ahead. Matt Ryan's really good, guys. He is really good. And then Cam Newton, who had an MVP season, he certainly, look, all four of these teams have a reason that they can win. And it's because if their quarterback plays at their optimum level, they can bring their team to the playoff. That's how important that position is. And that's how important of a year it is for these guys, including Jameis Winston at the bottom of the four here. So I'll go Brees, Ryan, Newton, and Winston. Think about that. A number one overall pick in the draft, and he's dead last in his own division. Big year for Jameis Winston. All right, a lot to go, a lot to come, plenty to talk about today on the show, including the NBA is seeking feedback from teams about an alternative to their season. I've got the details coming up. This is SB Nation AM. Mike Gill in for Tony D.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
So that's In Excess, right? 88 In Excess, where they were big when big was huge, man.
That's right.
So the week is 1988, or the year is 1988, right?
Yes.
So what is the event that happened?
The event that happened on this date in 1988 was Mike Tyson knocks out Michael Spinks in...
Michael Spinks.
In 91 seconds.
Yeah. It's 5 minutes from my house, dude. I mean, literally, that happened at what was then Convention Hall, is now Boardwalk Hall. It's where they have the Miss America pageant. It's where all the big boxing matches used to be. They no longer come to Atlantic City for whatever reason. It's a big topic of conversation in our backyard. But that fight was the quickest thing we'd, I mean, you know, we're all kids at the time. I'm a kid at that time. You're a kid at that time. That fight was so fast. This guy, I talked about this a week ago on my local show here, Ron. Mike Tyson, for a 2 or 3 year span, was the biggest sports phenomenon you had ever heard about, yep, or seen or lived through. Like, his fights, with the Spinks fight right in the mix of this, they were events, but they weren't events in the ring. They were events leading up, like that you were going to get to see this guy for. It's almost like when someone so famous pops their head out or does something, and then they go back into hiding for years and years. I mean, like, that's Tyson. When he fought, it was such an event. It was unmatched by any sporting. I couldn't think of an event or a sporting something, a person that matched the height of me growing up with Mike Tyson, and that fight was right in the middle of it all.
Well, I mean, what I remember most, too, is it was one of those situations where, I mean, if you paid all this money, especially for pay-per-view, or even a ticket to go there, you're shelling out hundreds of dollars, you weren't upset that you saw that your main event only lasted less than 2 minutes.
You knew it was lasting only 2 minutes.
You were hoping for that to happen.
Yeah, if it didn't happen, you didn't know what was going on. And that's what happened when he lost to Buster Douglas. You were watching that fight, and you're like, something's not right here.
Yeah.
And he ends up losing the thing.
Why is it still going on?
Yeah, exactly. Well, so it was this day in 1988 that he knocks out Spinks. Now, he ends up beating, first he beat Tony Tucker to win the championship. So from that point on, that little span there from 87 up until he beats Carl the Truth Williams, also in Atlantic City, in 89. That run from 87 to 89, the hysteria around Tyson, well, I guess you can go up to Buster Douglas when he lost in 90. Everything leading up to that fight was the biggest sports phenomenon that I think I ever lived through.
Yeah. It was must-see TV. You had to check him out. And you were afraid of him. Like, you knew that if you met him in a dark alley that he would just pummel you.
You were afraid for the other guy is what you were afraid of. You just felt like this poor guy, you know. So he fights Spinks, then he goes to Bruno, then Carl the Truth Williams, then Buster Douglas, he loses. And then after Buster Douglas, it's just like Henry Tillman, Alex Stewart, Razor Ruddock, the back-to-backers, that McNeely fight, which was after he gets out of prison now, and that McNeely fight was just a total joke. That guy was a complete clown show. Buster Mathis Jr., Frank Bruno, and then he fights Bruce Seldon, who's from Atlantic City, and I remember being in college for that fight, and I felt bad for Bruce when I saw him enter the ring. I was like, this isn't going to end well, and you felt like that Tyson was back, like you were getting back to that level, and then he fought Holyfield and lost both times, got the whole ear-biting incident, mm-hmm, and then after that, his life and career just took a turn for, I guess he's back. I actually met Mike Tyson a couple of years ago. He was in Atlantic City doing his one-man show. Have you ever seen that?
No, I've seen bits and pieces of it. I haven't seen it all the way through. I know that he's I'm not going to say he's a recluse, but he is, because we've had him on this network as well. He's tough to have on air.
Yeah, I had him on the air
tough
with
to
me.
Control.
I had him on the air. I'm trying to recall the conversation of, like, you know, I remember, so he did the one-man show, and then I got to go backstage and meet him with my father. My father, who used to box, by the way, him and Tyson had some mutual sparring partner that they were talking about, which I was fascinated by. By the way, Tyson's hands, now you know why he knocked everybody out so brutally. His hands are like catcher's mitts, dude. They are, like, massive. He's got these huge, thick hands. So now you know why he has so much pop behind, like, when he would hit you. His hands are like catcher's mitts. They're gigantic. That guy, and the night that I met him, very reserved, very, like, soft-spoken. And I mean, totally different from what you saw. But I think it was, like, a sign, like, you know, he had kind of gotten himself back together a little bit. But I don't really recall. That's odd that it's one of the more fascinating guys I've ever talked to in my life, and I don't really recall the notion of the or the content of the interview. Weird, right?
That is kind of. I mean, you must have just been in awe.
I'm awestruck. Yeah, well, as you said, a lot of his fights were right up the street from my house. I mean, he fought in Convention Hall. Let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 times in the 80s and the 90s. I mean, this was basically, the spot for all the boxing. And we talk a lot, I was telling you the other day, I do play-by-play for UFC Fight Pass. I do a lot of MMA stuff. And the Fight Pass app, there's a story out there, I guess they're trying to get more content. And some of the content they're going after is boxing, because there's this feel that boxing is kind of making a little return here. I don't know if you saw, if you're a boxing guy at all or an MMA guy at all, but did you see the Fury fight the other night, like 2 weekends ago?
No. If I'm up late and I'm alone on the couch, I'll catch it on, I'll try to find it like through Facebook, through somebody periscoping it or something like that.
Well, this was one of those.
I'll do it that way.
This is so Tyson Fury, for people out there who don't know, he is the heavyweight champion of the world. And he fought some guy like Tom Schultz, like he was your next door neighbor, right? They pulled him out and said, hey, you want to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world? He gets destroyed. I mean, he gets absolutely lambasted at this guy the other night. It was almost embarrassing that the two guys were in the ring together. But for the common, fan and someone who thinks boxing's kind of dead, you might not even know who Tyson Fury is. You see this big, goofy guy walking to the ring. He has this black cape on, and, you're just like, what is this guy doing? And then he gets out to the arena. So he's walking from, the way back to the arena, and they have him coming out with this black cape on. He hits the arena, and the lights go on. He drops the cape, and he's got the Apollo Creed gear on. And he's got all the women with the feathers, and he does Live It in America. He comes out to this song, and he does the whole Rocky thing. Now, his whole thing is, now, keep in mind, Apollo Creed was an African-American man. Tyson Fury's about a 6'9" white guy doing the Live It in America. It kind of looked pretty funny, like him trying to mock Apollo Creed, but his whole thing is he wants to be America's champion. He's from England. And he wants to be American. So he comes in and destroys this guy. I mean, absolutely just picked him apart. Well, then afterwards, this guy, I don't know if you've heard about this or seen anything or if you guys talked about this when it happened, but he sings. So he does his post-fight interview, and then the guy will say, oh, I understand you have a little number you want to do. Oh, really? So he pulls the microphone. The guy starts belting out tunes. He's serenading his wife. He's got love songs. I mean, this guy's a showman. He's an entertainer, man. He's more than just a heavyweight champion of the world. This guy should be on America's Got Talent. I mean, this guy's got something going. He's a reason, Ron, that you need to get off your couch and watch some boxing, because this guy here, he's something else. And if anything, just watch him sing, man. Just watch him belt. Mike Tyson's not getting on the mic and doing a one-man show when he's done. He's not singing a tune. He's not serenading his wife.
No, he just saves it for the movies now.
That's right. What was the movie he was in where
Hangover?
He got the The Hangover, that's right. Is that when they got the tattoos on their face to match him?
The second one. Yeah, it was Hangover 2 where one character got a tattoo on his face.
Right.
And Mike Tyson showed up just to he was a surprise wedding gift.
That's right. Tyson with the, and what did he have, like the big lion at his house or something?
Yeah, the tiger. That was in the first one.
The tiger was in the first one.
Yeah, he just keeps popping up in all those movies.
If you've never seen his one-man show out there, by the way, it is kind of worth it. He does a really good job. Like, I don't know who produced it for him or who does it, and I don't know if he still does it, like if he still travels and does it, but it was actually pretty good. It's like set to, it's set to like all pictures and movie and like video, and he does a good job of like kind of setting everything up, and you get to kind of go back, and it's actually pretty interesting. I don't know if he still does it, but if you could probably find it on YouTube, right? I would imagine.
Oh yeah, you can find. I mean, you can watch it in its entirety. You can watch it during one of our breaks.
Don't do that. All right, because
one thing I got to say about Tyson too is that he was the first mainstream. I would say I think he was the first mainstream athlete to cross over into video games.
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out is one of the greatest games
ever
of all time, and it is one of those games where I haven't played it in 20 years, but I would probably remember everything that you need to do to beat every single guy in that game.
Yep, except Tyson.
Except for Tyson, which I think I've done one time. Hey, when we come back, the latest on what Jimmy Butler and the Rockets, what might happen there, Michael Caskey-Blomain covers the 76ers. We'll get their angle on it. What are they thinking? He joins me next right here. Mike Gill in for Tony D. This is SB Nation AM. Love is like a bomb, 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 bomb.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
All right, good Thursday morning, everybody. Mike Gill in for Tony D, SB Nation AM. We know the Jimmy Butler news is really fluid and a lot of information coming out. Let's get some more news and information from Michael Caskey-Blomain. Covers the 76ers for 97.3 ESPN.com. And he is also covers the NBA for 24/7 Sports. He is a member of the Professional Basketball Writers Association. And you can follow him on Twitter at TheRealMikeKB. So, Mike, let's dive right into this. Does the news of Butler, I mean the Rockets being interested in Butler, if you're a Sixers fan, should that worry you at all? Does that scream that something's going on here?
So, Mike, I think, you know, the Rockets have long been interested in Jimmy. There was rumors before, before the Sixers traded for him last year that the Rockets were trying to offer up to 4 first-round picks from Minnesota to land him. I think it's, you know, been Daryl Morey's, one thing that's been on his mind, pairing Butler with, Harden and now Paul. But I don't think that really changes anything in terms of the Sixers, especially since the Rockets aren't a team that could sign him outright. They would need to obviously jump through hurdles in terms of, a sign and trade and give up, big chunks of their rotation in order to make it happen. I just think it seems, it seems like a long shot that he would go there, that he would want to go there, first of all, and second of all, even if he did, that it would be, something that would be able to be feasible on both ends. So I think, Jimmy's a guy that's definitely in demand. I know you had a piece up on the website talking about how there's, several teams interested in him. And I think the Rockets are just another team, but I don't think that they're, the Sixers are still in the driver's seat, the way I see it.
If the report that the Rockets would be willing to move players to pick up picks is accurate, wouldn't that suggest that they feel that Butler would be willing to come to them? Like, why would they give up Capella or Gordon or Tucker to get a draft pick back only to have Butler say, I want to stay in Philly?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, Mike. Maybe they just think that they can, ultimately entice him. He obviously, he has some ties to the Houston area. Maybe they think they can play on that friendship that he has with, Chris Paul and James Harden. But I think it's more a matter of, Daryl Morey, since he took over that job in 2007, has been, kind of even ahead of the curve in terms of he's been a really star-oriented general manager. He's heavy on making sure that they have, as many stars as possible, and you kind of figure out the rest of the roster later. And I think in Jimmy, he just sees a guy that he thinks would fit well with James, that would do a lot of the dirty work that maybe they don't have a player of that caliber that can do at this point. So I think that it's something that they hope that they could probably sell Jimmy, but I don't think at this point that they would have, any indication specifically that he's, itching to get to Houston ahead of anywhere else in the league.
Michael Caskey-Blomain covers the Sixers for 97.3 ESPN.com, covers the NBA for 24/7 Sports. He's a member of the Pro Basketball Writers Association. So, MKB, let me ask you this then. Sunday at 6, do the Sixers present their best offer to Butler because of this? Wouldn't they have to?
Mike, I think, if anything, these rumors and reporting puts pressure on the Sixers to, not only give an offer, as soon as possible, but also make it, their best possible offer. They are obviously in the driver's seat financially in terms of they can give Jimmy not only more money, but more years than any other team in the league. And, I think it's been reported, and from what I've heard, it would be, Jimmy would – wants that 5-year max deal. And if the Sixers, you know, are able to offer him that at, you know, as soon as the time opens on Sunday evening and they're there with that 5-year max offer, I think that, you know, I think that neutralizes a lot of the other outside noise, and I think it's hard for him to turn it down in that situation. You know, if they come with a shorter deal, 4 years, the same amount of time that you can get elsewhere, something short of the max, then, you know, maybe it leaves it open for him and his team to start taking some of these outside meetings and consider other things. But, you know, if the Sixers want Jimmy, I think if they have to come with that max offer as soon as possible, and I think if they do that, there's a good chance he'll be back in Philly.
Right. It's almost like if they give him $5,190, then he's like, all right, you got me. But if they lowball him, that's when he might say, you know what? You might want to listen to Houston's offer.
Mike, I think that's basically the exact thing. I think if you lowball him, if you don't come with the full 5 years and you try to go with the 4 years, that, you know, that's a move that you can end up shooting yourself in the foot, because at that point, you know, it's something similar with what happened in Minnesota. He felt, you know, kind of disrespected that, you know, Karl Towns and Wiggins were getting paid ahead of him. I think he's, you know, a prideful guy. He's, you know, fought for his spot in the league to be an all-star, to be deserving of this max. You know, he's put himself in position to get this full 5-year deal. And I think, you know, if you give him that, you're in a good position. If you hold back, like you said, and you lowball him, or you cut a year off the deal and leave the door open for other teams to, you know, give him a more enticing offer, I think that's a bad situation for the Sixers if they want to bring him back.
What do you think of the return for Philly? Are you, if Jimmy Butler says, look, you better listen to Houston, I'm not interested in re-signing, even if he gets $5,190 and he's like, look, I just don't want to come back here, do you feel comfortable with the return if you're Elton Brand?
I don't think so, Mike. I don't think that's something that they'll pursue, at least from what I've heard. If Jimmy's going to leave, you know, he leaves and you'll at least have the cap space left over to make your own moves rather than kind of, you know, get a return of, you know, some guys that are nice pieces, but at the end of the day, they're guys that you could find similar, you know, contributors on the open market. I think ultimately you come with the full deal. If he turns it down, you know, he turns it down and you move on from there with the salary cap space that you have left over, rather than trying to, you know, get assets back that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, maybe not even go after on the open market. So I just don't see, you know, it's something the Rockets are pushing. I think all the reporting that's coming out from, you know, Woj and ESPN is coming from, you know, Houston side, and I think it's something that they want to push that narrative, but it just doesn't seem, I don't see the benefit of the Sixers doing that if Jimmy were to leave.
So you think the Sixers would rather just let him walk, get the cap space, rather than take on Gordon, Capella, Tucker?
That's the vibe that I'm kind of getting, Mike. You know, because Capella's a guy, he's not going to want to come here to be a backup to Embiid, so you'd have to flip him. Gordon's a nice piece and Tucker's a nice piece, but at the same time, you know, taking them on, you strap yourself cap wise, flexibility wise. If Butler's going to walk, you know, the Sixers can still offer Tobias the full, you know, max going forward. They could bring JJ back, and then they could use that money that would have gone to Jimmy to, you know, target some other, maybe not superstar level players, but some other nice pieces on the market, like a PJ Tucker or an Eric Gordon, that could, you know, complement Joel and Ben and the other guys well, rather than, you know, having their cap space dictated by guys and giving them in a trade.
Interesting. What about if they were able to trade one of those guys and get a pick? And, you know, picks in the NBA are tricky. I don't know what level of pick would take it. Would it take to say, okay, that team's going to be not very good, so we're interested in that? You know what I'm saying? Like, is it, you know, a team that's going to be a 20-win team, a 30-win team, to where you would say, okay, we would take, like, a pick that's in the teens. Does that get it done? Like, what level of pick would Houston have to entrepreneur? Because apparently they're trying to, you know, offer these guys for picks. What kind of pick should they be looking for? And would you feel comfortable with, if you're Philly, to say, all right, we would take that pick?
I mean, if anything, Mike, I think it would have to be, you know, a pick of a team that's going to be projected in the lottery in the coming season. But I think, you know, Elton Brand has made it pretty clear, both by the moves that he made on draft night and the things that he said. You know, the Sixers window, they feel like, is now, and they're not necessarily looking to, you know, add more, a lot of young players to this mix that they have now, and putting it off a season to get a draft pick in the future you know, obviously that's something that this franchise did for years under Sam and into Brian's tenure. But they're firmly in win now mode, so it would have to be, you know, a pretty appealing pick to make Elton feel, you know, okay with kind of pushing the buck to another summer instead of, you know, using that extra cap space now to put, you know, the best possible team on the floor for this season to try to win a team next, you know, next June.
There was a tweet from Woj recently that said the Sixers feel confident. They're expressing confidence that they can bring both guys back. Should Sixer fans feel confident that come Sunday that Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, and maybe even J.J. Redick will all be back in Philadelphia?
I think the Sixers, the franchise itself, should feel confident, Mike, because they're in the driver's seat for all three of those guys. Like we said, if they want, you know, if they are willing to go into the luxury tax, if they think that this team is, you know, a couple bounces away from truly winning, you know, a title or true contention, then yeah, you give Jimmy, you know, the full max, you give Tobias the max, and you give JJ, you know, whatever he really wants, and you run it back. The fan base, I think, should be a slightly more skeptical, because I think the ownership group has proved to be, I don't want to say not trustworthy, but, you know, I don't think they have gained the full trust of the fan base at this point. So, you know, are they going to do that to make sure that the group is ran back? I think that remains a question mark. But if they want it to happen, they're in the driver's seat to make it happen. So it's definitely a good possibility.
Michael Caskey-Blomain covers the Sixers for 97.3 ESPN.com, covers the NBA for 24/7 Sports, Professional Hoops Writers Association. He's a member there as well, so well-versed in the NBA. If the Sixers do look out there in free agency, any under-the-radar names that they might have some interest in?
Yeah, Mike, I had up, you know, on the site today, I heard yesterday that they're targeting Terrence Ross as a, you know, from the Orlando Magic guard, you know, as a potential option. You know, the team's first priority is, you know, basically a version of running back where they
What kind of money is he looking for? Bring back JJ,
potentially even bring back Mike Scott, you know, roll it out with a very similar lineup. If they do that, obviously, their cap space outside of those guys would be extremely limited. Where and a guy like, you know, Danny Green or Terrence Ross will probably get out, you know, get a larger offer elsewhere. But if they end up, you know, missing on any of those guys, whether it be JJ, you know, Tobias, Jimmy, and they do have some, you know, cap space left over, Terrence Ross is a guy that it's, you know, they will target, you know, pretty quickly. Floor spacer, about a 38% shooter from long distance, would fit in well. You know, off the bench or potentially as a spot starter in certain situations. And Danny Green, obviously off Toronto, a similar role. That's two guys that I think the Sixers have, you know, I've been told that they have their eye on pretty heavily as a, you know, sort of a plan B other than, you know, bringing it back with the same guys, which is obviously plan A for the team.
Yeah, what kind of money? I mean, is that just like you're hoping or is that, I mean, he made like $10 million bucks last year. So is he a guy that if somebody walks, you're involved in there or do they like to add him in addition to Butler and Harris and Redick?
The situation, Mike, where I think it's where somebody walks. Maybe if Redick walks, if they end up losing out on Jimmy and they have, you know, some space left over, because he's, like you said, he's been about a $10 million player for the past couple of years, probably on par for a similar contract. It's not a slight bump based off, you know, just the way the league's going in terms of his ability to space the floor. So that's a situation where they're looking like, all right, they've lost one of the three guys that you just mentioned. They're looking to fill in. You know, they've looked toward him in that situation then.
MKB, Michael Caskey-Blomain, 97.3 ESPN.com. Of course, at The Real Mike KB on Twitter. Give him a follow there for the Sixers and the NBA, 24/7 Sports.
Some fascinating stuff from him as we will continue to look at this conversation with Jimmy Butler and the Rockets moving forward, because new stuff continues to emerge, as we talked about with MKB right there, which was, look, the Rockets are basically trying to pawn off these guys, Capella, Gordon, and P.J. Tucker, to teams to try to get a pick back in return. And when we come back, you know, there is something with that idea that kind of stands out to me that might give us a hint on something. And I'll explain when we come back. This is Mike Gill in for Tony D, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, filling in for Tony D, here's Mike Gill.
So apparently this is the number one song this week in 1988.
Yes, sir.
I feel like I should know it. Like, if I'm going to be on the Shazam show, I need to know the title of this song, and I don't have it.
You do? Well, you know the singer.
It sounds like, what, Debbie Gibson?
Debbie Gibson, there you go.
Yes, so song I got
was,
that.
The song was called Foolish Beat.
By the way, Ron Culver, can I tell you, yesterday we had a very important lunch meeting. I'm looking for a partner for this Beat Shazam show, and I think I found one. I have a coworker who doubles up on our country station and our pop station in the building here where I am.
There you go.
And she's got those genres kind of covered. And I'm over here on the rock side, the alt rock, like a little R&B, little stuff. But Debbie Gibson would have to fall to her in that. I mean, I got Debbie Gibson. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, that is pretty good.
Debbie Gibson used to have a vacation home, like 5 minutes. Everything's 5 minutes from me, right? 5 minutes this way is where Mike Tyson knocked out Spinks. And let me tell you, she lived 5 minutes the opposite direction. Because if she went 5 minutes the other way, she wouldn't be in a good spot. But she was living 5 minutes the other way. Debbie Gibson was big when big was huge, man. And she was, I would love to know, like right now, Ron Culver, you and I are having a conversation about Debbie Gibson. What is she doing right this moment?
I think she's doing Broadway.
Really?
Yeah, and she changed her name to Deborah.
Deborah. By the way, he went Mike Tyson in 1988. You know what else happened on this date? LeBron James was the first pick in the draft. Is Tyson bigger than LeBron? Ron Culver thought so. I'm Mike Gill, in for Tony D, SB Nation AM.